Welcome back to the Average to Savage Show with Scaletti, a podcast that will help you overcome your limiting beliefs, setbacks, and fears to create the life you were destined to live. Welcome back, everybody. Matt Scaletti here again with a very, very special guest. This is Kevin Stark, and Kevin is a father, a husband, a retired Navy SEAL with 22 years of service, and now Kevin is providing training and coaching for those seeking to live a life of excellence. Kevin, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, too. I've been telling Kevin offline here that I'm so excited for this conversation. This is the first Navy SEAL that we have had on the show, and I cannot wait to dive in. So let's just jump right in. Do you want to share your background? And I guess my first question would be, are you somebody that grew up as a kid and was like, I want to be a Navy SEAL? Or was it in your family? Or how did that all come about to even want to take that step?
Yeah, good question. My dad was in the military. He was in the Army. He was a helicopter pilot. So I actually was born in Germany, and we grew up overseas for a while. And then, so I kind of had the military, background throughout my life growing up and that type of experience. And then as a kid, I remember in high school, not really knowing what I was going to do for a while. I was convinced, I think we talked about this before, I was going to play in the NBA.
Oh yeah, we were both convinced of that.
Yeah. I was shooting hoops 365 days a year. And then I think I kind of realized that maybe the genetic side of the spectrum wasn't quite there for me a little bit. But so that was fun. And then one thing I did realize early on, I think, thankfully, is I was mature enough to realize that I was not mature enough for college. I knew that if I went to school after high school, I wouldn't do well. I wouldn't be ready. I spent high school looking out the window every single day in math class, just dreaming of going on adventures or doing, just so full of like a thirst for life. And I still feel like that now. And so I decided, like, okay, let's check out the military, and heard some stories about Navy SEALs, and I went to the Navy recruiter and I watched that 45-minute VHS tape that they had.
I remember
probably those. Yeah, probably 900 times. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna do it. So that was it. That was kind of the catalyst, was basically just adventure, fun, and then being a part of something special and doing it with people who are also feeling the same way. So it's kind of like a call to adventure, I think we all have. And that was the avenue that I took. And yeah, jumped right in. I was, 18, went to boot camp and then SEAL training, 18, 19 years old. Finished that out, my best friends there, who are still my best friends 20 some years later. And spent the next 22 years with an amazing group of people, with an important mission, and learning a lot about myself and learning a lot about others. And then came away with a great appreciation for mentorship. I had a lot of people that helped me out. I was super young, very immature, and I had people that took me under their wing. And so I think that experience left an impression and made me want to help others in the same way. And I was able to do that while I was in. So after I retired, I figured I'll keep doing that, just help training and mentoring others and helping them, see what's within themselves, even though they might not see it yet.
Oh, I love that. I love how you said that. All right. So we'll definitely, I want to hear about the instructor part for sure. Mm-hmm. How about, can we dive into, and I want to be respectful of questions that I'm asking you for what you can share or not share, but as far as like, you're 18, 19 years old when you go off to training, like, can you, I don't know if you're going to remember day one, but can you try, like, do you remember day one and like what was going on in your head and your body? And yeah, I would love to hear.
I think just super excited because I was finally in a reality that I had only dreamed of before, where it's like, before you go, you're reading sealed books, watching, that recruiter tape, imagining it in your head, and then day one when you're standing there, like, oh my gosh, I'm finally here. So probably like everybody else, you're just super excited. And you're just soaking it all in. It was funny because I thought everybody else, sometimes we, I think, base our assumptions on our own experience. So I was 18 years old, so I just assumed everybody else was 18 or 19 years old.
Oh
And
yeah.
it's funny, on the weekends in Buds, you usually get the weekends off. So you train Monday through Friday. Obviously you're cleaning your gear and everything. And on the weekends, you get to go out and SEAL trainings in San Diego, which is a great place to hang out. And I remember on the weekends, I would be in the barracks, sharpening my knife or whatever. And then they used to have these lounges, and I would sit in the lounge, and I'm like, I am the only one here. Like, where the heck is everybody? And what I didn't realize is, like, a lot of people were over 21. So they were all out in town in San Diego having a great time. And I had no car. So I was just sitting. I would go play in the ocean. I would maybe surf, borrow a friend's surfboard. But otherwise, I would just clean my gear and hang out in the barracks. And then it finally dawned on me, holy crap, like, other people are out there, partying, drinking, having fun, or, they got cars, so they're driving around. So my experience was a little different, and it was kind of funny how eye-opening it was to realize, okay, not everybody's an 18-year-old kid from Fresno, California.
You know what, as you're saying that, Kevin, I'm wondering, was that helpful that you weren't? Because then, like me, I mean, I made a lot of bad decisions when I turned 21. Like, I wonder if that was beneficial to not be able to go out and do some of that stuff.
That's such a good question. I feel like, at any age, if a lot of things will work out in favor, I think if your heart's in the right place. Obviously bad things happen, but I think it probably helped me, keeping me in that environment, just front sight focused on training and school and, in that environment. Like I said, I was pretty mature. So if I was out in town with other folks, there was a higher likelihood of, getting in trouble or doing something dumb, or, God forbid, showing up late Monday morning, you'd be toast.
I'm sure that would not go over very well. So what, like, as you're going through, and I think a lot of us, myself included, I mean, we all see the documentaries of Buds and Hell Week and all of that. Now, was that the toughest part of training? And is there anything that you can share as far as what the toughest part of that was for you, and how you overcame it? And I would love to know, did you know the second you got there, I'm all in, like, I will not quit no matter what? Like, or was there, when were you most tested in the training?
Yeah, I think everybody has certain elements of training that are more challenging to them than others. You toe the line on the sand and you do your 4 mile timed run every Monday morning, and there's probably a chunk of guys in the class who are like, oh man, this is gonna be easy for me, I'm gonna knock it out. And then there's a chunk of guys who are like, I absolutely hate the 4 mile timed run, I have to put everything possible out there just to pass. And then you go to the swim, and then you got a group of students who are like, now they switch. Now the guys who are hating runs are like, finally I get to get in the ocean and swim and obstacle course. So I think, and then there's going to be that small pack of folks who are like, man, I did pretty good at everything. And then there's going to be that small pack of folks who are like, everything sucked in Buds for me, I just like gutted it out. Everybody has a different experience. I didn't really, I don't know, I just felt like there was no other choice or opportunity or no other path to go down. I just felt like, maybe because I was so young, I was like, well, this is where I'm at. This is just what I do. And you find kind of like a group of friends that are maybe like the same age, and you get along. because the buds class is when you first start like 150 people. So you find like your pocket or maybe your boat crew with guys who are about your same height, and you kind of hang out and go through together and try to keep each other motivated. So, I mean, challenging for me was probably like the grind of it. You know, like we always used to joke, if there was a bell next to our beds, like guys would ring it all the time. You're like waking up early in the morning and you're like, oh man, here we go again. But once you're up, you're just like excited to be there. If I forgot why I was there, and I remind guys of this, like, hey, if you have a, you know, that famous quote, if you have a why to live for, you can bear almost anyhow, is, you know, I'm becoming a Navy SEAL instead of I'm laying in the cold water and it sucks. So if I could remember that, I was like, man, I'm in buds. I'm finally here. Like that would always help a little bit. The hardest part for me was second phase, which was the diving, the scuba part where they, you know, we do pool comp where they take your regulator hose and they tie it in knots and you got to untie it. You got to, you know, remain very, very calm under pressure when your immediate state wants you to react because you've got your air cut off and you're underwater. So you're fighting that natural urge to react, but you got to respond instead and do your job and focus on the tasks ahead of you. I think for me, I had built that stressor up in my mind so much before I even started that evolution that I went in at a deficit, if that makes sense. I was like, oh my God, this is pool comp. This is scary. So many guys get dropped for this. So many guys get rolled. Holy crap, holy crap. And then when I did it, actually failed the first time. You get four tries. So I failed the first time. And they're like, they debrief you. And I was like, holy crap, like that was tough, but it wasn't that bad. Like I need to stop working myself up. And then they send you in the back of the line and they say, get in the back of the line, think about what you did, and you'll try it again. I'm like, whatever, one half an hour, hour. But instead of going to the back of the line, I cut to the front of the line because I was like, I can't sit in the back of the line because if I do that, my mind's going to race and I'm going to be like the negative Nancy, like, oh shit. So I got out of the pool, fail, got out of the pool, and I just walked to the front of the line and got back in and then passed. But I was like, that was a huge lesson learned for me. It's like, damn, Kevin, like, usually your mind will make it far worse than it actually is. So, that's been, I mean, the case throughout life. So I think that was a huge lesson, but that was my major obstacle. And when I passed that, that's when I just knew, okay, I'm in, I got it. Even though I still had, you know, third phase and most of second phase left, I just knew like I got this. I made it through pool comp. And I think everyone has that moment, whether it's Hell Week or pool comp or some other milestone, or maybe I passed my final 4 mile timed run in third phase. Everyone will have that when they say, okay, I got it. Like I can. So that was my moment.
I love that. It sounds like they do a very good job of testing every single area of body, mind, soul, spirit. And you gave so many great takeaways right there, Kevin. I wrote down because I think anybody can learn from that. The mind will normally make it worse than it is. And it seems like for people that are starting a business or giving their first speech, like it seems like it's always worse in our minds than once we get up there. And it's like, it wasn't. I mean, maybe it was bad, but not as bad as I thought. I mean, it seems like it's a great takeaway there. And also, it seems like another takeaway. Is it true? Did I hear you say basically when you went to training, there was no plan B for you? It sounded like you were like, is that when we were talking offline real quick? Is there a differentiator from people, do you think, who make it through and those who don't? And can you see the, is it like the look on the face? Is it the why? Is it they're in it for themselves and not for the team? Like, or is it all of that? Is there any thoughts on that?
That's such a great question, and I know that the Navy Special Warfare has been researching this question because they want to find an answer. Because if they can find an answer, then they can select the right people up front and put them through the training, and they won't have the attrition. to me, I'm glad there hasn't been an answer because I think, and I would tell students this on day one, I said, every single one of you in this room can make it through training, but you won't. But I truly believe that they could have made it. And there was times when you see a kid and they're like way down in the dumps and you're like, all right, like he's probably not too happy. He might go away. But then there's people that always surprise you. So I would, at first I thought, oh, he's going to make it. That happened in my buds class. It was like, oh man, that dude's definitely going to make it. That dude's a fr he looks like Thor. Holy shit. And then he would quit, you know, and here I am, 140 pounds, soaking wet, little guy or whatever I weigh. But I think you never can tell. And I think that's a beautiful thing that each man is a truly a master of his own destiny, and it all comes down to choice. I mean, one of the stories I used to illustrate is, Mike Mansoor, awarded the Medal of Honor. He was a SEAL. He jumped on a grenade, literally, what you hear about in the movies, to save his teammates. He died, but he didn't make it his first time in butts. He quit. So then he came back and he made it, obviously, and was super successful and amazing SEAL. But it goes to show, like, that same person, quit, chose to quit, but that same person also then made it and chose to do something many would have the courage to do. So I always reserve the right for people to choose a path of excellence. And I would never count someone out, especially when it's a matter of you choosing. Now, there's people that fought to stay that would never quit, but they didn't meet the standard. We had those students, and it's like, you're just not ready yet. You have a great attitude. Come back when you're physically stronger, whatever it is.
That's
But I'm
kind of
glad
tough.
they haven't solved that. Yeah, that is hard. That sucks. I've had to have those talks with kids who are crying, like, I never quit. I'm like, I know you didn't quit, man. You got a great heart. You're a great kid, but the standard is here and you're not meeting it yet. Like, come back and you'll do fine. And some of them would, and some of them wouldn't. So yeah, there's a lot there, and I think that's just the beauty of the human spirit. So I'm glad that mystery isn't unlocked.
I love how you answered that. That's such a great answer that you're happy that there's no good answer to that. And that's so well said. And it's like, hopefully the mystery lives on forever, but that has to be, I'm just envisioning that almost like that Rudy kid that just refuses to quit, but the skill level or the strength, whatever it is not there. And that has to be, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. That has to be hard to see that they wouldn't quit no matter what, but they're just not at the standard yet. But that's not, Kevin, I think this is so fascinating that not only were you, did you go through the training, but then you turned around and became an instructor on the other side. Like, how was it? Well, you know what? Before we get there, can I just ask you, like, when you get through all the training and you actually become a Navy SEAL, I mean, can you attempt to describe to us what that feels like when you're standing there? And is it, I mean, I can't even fathom what that feels like, but what did it feel like for you?
Well, such a good question. When I, it's called getting your trident. When I got my trident, it used to be dependent on the SEAL teams to award tridents to the new guys when they felt they were ready. Now it's all encompassed by a training pipeline. So you go to BUDS, you do your jump school. And then you go to advanced training, and then when you finish that, you get your trident and go to a SEAL team. So you're a SEAL when you get to your SEAL team. It's probably a lot more that way. Everybody gets the same standardized amount of training, and it's a lot more advanced. When I first got there, it was you made it through BUDS, and then you get assigned to your SEAL team, and then that SEAL will determine. They have their own method of when they award tridents. When I went to SEAL Team One, it was okay, you get there, you're on 6 months of probation. Basically, we want to make sure that you have a good attitude. First thing I heard when I got to the SEAL team is all the new guys, I think there's like six or seven of us, we were assigned to just working parties. We were cleaning, we were painting offices, you know, just like, hey, this wasn't in the brochure. So we were just like, you know, whatever labor the SEAL team needed, we were doing it, which is good. You know, it's humble pie. And I had one of the guys, his name was Nate, come up to us as we were all painting the walls. And he's like, hey, you guys, the new guys checking in? I'm like, yeah. Like, you guys got two things to offer this community, a good work ethic and a good attitude. Remember that. And he just walked away. And that stuck with me for, and I said that to new guys when I got to, when I was in the teams after a while. So I think, you know, being on probation, and then we had to study, we had to take some, you know, review boards where you had to learn about radios and navigation and boats and, you know, parachutes and all kinds of equipment. So we were studying. It was pretty stressful. And then you sat in front of, you know, a board of all of the senior enlisted guys at the SEAL team. So they're all decked out in their uniforms and shiny ribbons and tridents. And you're sitting in there, you know, with your, you know, one service ribbon in the middle of a room, and they're grilling you with questions. And, you know, they're trying to get to know your character, which is just so important, far so more than like your physical skill set or your ability to think. It's like, who are you as a person? And that's what they were really trying to get at. And that scared the shit out of me. That was challenging. Like, oh man, like if you goof up on your training board, you're out. Can you imagine doing all that training and then not making it?
Oh,
But
no.
and then they would keep you in the dark. They would say, okay, get out of here, beat it. And they wouldn't tell you if you passed or failed, and you would just be sitting there. And one morning, you know, you do what's called quarters, which is where the team would come in the morning. They do their little morning announcements. Hey, here's what's going on, you know. And then they'd say, all right, Kevin Stark up front. And then they called a few other people, and they're like, you guys are getting your tridents today. And it was like, holy shit, oh my gosh, finally getting
Oh.
my trident. And they're like, pick somebody to pin your trident on, and then you're going to go hit the surf with them. That was their tradition. So I picked one of the guys who had been around for a while, who mentored me, and he put my trident on, and then we all go hit the surf, and that was it. And it's like, all right, get to work.
Oh, then it's like that's it. Then you start.
That's it. There's no fanfare, there's no calling mommy. It's like, all right, now you got your trident, like, let's go. It's Monday.
I don't know why I thought
Was
there was
pretty
like
cool.
a big ceremony. That's almost like
There is now.
there is.
So when you get your trident, like all the families come in, which is good, you know. But I thought that was a pretty special moment. So yeah, during that, when they told us, all right, you're getting your tridents this morning at quarters, I was like, oh my gosh, like, holy shit. You know, you just look back at, I've been trying to climb this mountain for so long, and I'm finally here. But the beautiful part was, all right, now it's Monday morning, let's go. You know, so I think that the teams do a great job of just keeping us humble, because it's a never ending, you're carrying the boat,
Yeah.
you know, your whole career. But when you leave, someone else fills your spot and the boat keeps going. So it's almost like you get to be a part of something special, and you try to do your best to carry your weight, to represent the community, and then you step aside, you know. So there's a humility part to it, because it's never about you. But yeah, it was a special experience.
Thanks for sharing that. I didn't know that that's how it was 20 plus years ago, that it was just sort of like, okay, here's pin your medal and then life goes on. And it's like, because I was wondering too, Kevin, if that's hard for how many people probably dedicated a big piece of their life to have that happen. And then is there any sort of letdown, like, well, now I'm a CEO, I can kind of let off the gas pedal a little bit, or they're so. They train you so well that it's like, oh no, this is when you start hitting the gas, like once you get that pin.
Yeah, in the military and in the community especially, I think there is always greater responsibility the further you go. Whether it's, okay, you're a SEAL, now you need to master your craft so that we can absolutely trust you. And so you're training, you're training, you're training, you're training. I mean, it increases the level of effort and responsibility. And then you reach this little bit of a threshold where you have to maintain your competencies, but now you're also training and taking care of the new guys when they come in to help them get up to speed. So your focus from self proficiency and how am I holding up as a teammate to how am I taking care of my people, that transition will happen. And that's also a beautiful stage in your career when you can help other people grow and develop them, because you've kind of got a level of expertise where you're still maintaining proficiencies and training, but you've done it long enough to where you're like, okay, I kind of know I got this a little bit. Now I have some bandwidth to bring up the next generation of guys.
And that's a great lead in to you being an instructor. I assume that's a big part of why you wanted to be an instructor, to bring up the next group of guys. Like how different is it seeing the training from the instructor's point of view from going through it yourself? Like that has to be so interesting seeing it on both sides, I would imagine.
It is. It's good. It's really rewarding. I think I was really, really fortunate. I worked with such a good group of people, of instructors, fellow SEALs, who now it's our turn to bring up the next generation. Just guys that I looked up to, guys that were just immensely professional, super hardworking, very talented. So that environment was very inspiring for me. And then the opportunity to, honestly be the face of the community. Because when these guys come in, day one, they see 15 or so SEAL instructors. Like you're the only, for some of these, most of them, you're the only SEAL they've ever interacted with and met. So you have to represent the standard for them to aspire to, right? So you, I mean, we all worked immensely hard and we had a great time doing it. But it's funny being on the other side of the curtain, right? And seeing the trainees come in, we talked about it. There was a few times as instructors, we'd look at each other and go like, God, this is horrible. Like, I can't believe that we did this. Like, this sucks. I don't know if I would do it again. We always used to joke with each other, like, if you had to do it again, start at day one, would you? Most guys are like, hell no. I'm sure we all would, but it was funny seeing that. And you see, one of the best things one of the senior guys did for me when I was an instructor, teach, we're super hard on the students, like very, very hard. As it should be. But one of the best things he ever did one day was he was our senior enlisted guy. He's a master chief, and he came in and he had we were just, pedals to the metal, balls to the wall, crushing students and like being very, very hard but fair, right? We were never, or I tried never to just be an asshole, just to be an asshole, because you
Yeah.
can abuse that position.
Sure.
But one day I remember he came into the office before we started and he handed everybody their student record, because you keep the center keeps a student record of everybody's performance. And he was like, take a look at this. And you look and you see, like, oh, maybe I wasn't all that awesome at, X, Y, and Z. And it just really helped keep in perspective, okay, yes, I need to hold the standard, but I also need to allow room for growth, because 19-year-old me was not the same as 25, 35, and 40-year-old me, right? There's a trajectory of growth. And when you're in that position of leadership, you have to recognize, A, that there is that trajectory of growth, but then also allow for it to happen. So, there is, you don't go crushing the kid who failed a run, who's got, 9 out of 10 other redeeming qualities, who's a great kid, whom I just need to work on some running form or some technique, right? So that was a very eye-opening moment where I was on the receiving end of, some good mentorship and some good humble pie. And it's like, all right, let's still be hard but fair, but let's also then seek ways to help kids truly grow a little bit past their current level.
I love that. That's such a great idea. And I love that, it sounds like you wanted it to be hard, and you were hard when needed. I was kind of curious because you seem very, even keel and like nothing. I'm sure there's not a lot that could get you rattled, but like as an instructor, is it like as you're instructing all of the students, and you see a couple like struggling a little bit, is it like, oh, let's see if like we can get them out, or like are you trying to weed them out, like help them grow, or is it like a combination of both? Because I mean, you only want the best to get through, right? Because you guys clearly have arguably the highest standard of any group in the world. So I mean, how did that go?
I would say we were pretty merciless out there, with good reason. I always wanted the best for any of them, whether they made it or they didn't. But I never put that in front of the needs of the community and my teammates, right? Because literally, when I finished Buds, I checked in the team one. Like within a week, I was, all right, everybody get on a bus. You're going to help this platoon with their diving stuff, their training. And I got on the bus, and there was one of my instructors. So you quickly realize that, you do your time as an instructor, and then you go back to a team, and it's like it's the need to keep that standard is paramount, because you're going to be working with these guys in a short amount of time. And for the officers, you'll be working for them in a short amount of time. So we definitely, if people were, I mean, I know it's hard to say, man. People, but students would come up and say, man, you guys were merciless, but we loved it. Do you know what I mean? It's like you want to, it's like any challenging thing you go through. You want it to be hard because you want it to draw out the best in you, but you want it to be fair, right? If I was, and there was times I was an asshole to be an asshole, but I tried not to. So, I mean, but yeah, if you were lagging behind, or if you were doing something you weren't, our default was to make you even more miserable. Instead of, hey, come on, buddy, you can do it. Like that would hardly ever happen.
I
I
love
mean, we
that. I
did that a
love,
few times, but
yeah. No, I love how real and raw and honest you are. That's so cool. And then I love how you went through and described being an instructor. And then one of the other things I wanted to ask you about the whole experience, Kevin, is when you retired, how, because this is something that I quite honestly frustrates me, the transition out of military into civilian life. And I mean, I've had friends or like friends of friends that you hear these stories, it's hard for them to transition. Like, how was that transition for you? And I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on better ways that we can have that transition happen, but it seems like there's a little bit of a gap there. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to fix it, but how was the transition for you, and any thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, it's a great question. Transition's tough. I mean, we all go through them, whether it's a phase of life, adulthood, teenagers, being a parent, married, whatever, jobs. For people in the military, and I'm reluctant to generalize, because I only speak from my own direct experience, but I've been through, transition organizations, and I've talked with my friends who've, most of which are now, transitioned from service. But it's tough because you shape yourself and you model yourself to be the best you possibly can within a certain environment. And that's, a cultural environment, an environment that demands certain psychology from you, physical skill sets, personality attributes that you might tend more towards than others. And in the military, typically, you have a very clear sense of mission, like what you're doing. Sometimes the purpose isn't always clear, like why are we here? Why are we doing this? But you typically have a clear sense of what you're doing. And so that allows you to pour more of yourself into the moment because you're certain that when you do that, the outcome is going to be, positive, or your work is going to build towards that mission, right? So there's a lot more certainty there. Even if you don't like it, there's certainty, which can be helpful. Because you can, at certain points in your career, you're like, man, I'm not really super motivated, but I know exactly what's demanded of me. I'm going to do that. When you leave, for me, for example, I joined at 18, left at 40. So I had no sense of what, society or the real world was about. I didn't have a sense of where do I take my energy and where do I apply it to get a similar sense or the same sense of, acceptance and accountability and satisfaction from knowing that I'm supporting a mission, I'm doing a task that means something, I'm connected with people, right? All of these elements that are across the board humans need, a sense of purpose, a sense of service, and a sense of meaningful connection with others, right? How do I fill those buckets necessary to human wellness, in a world that I'm unfamiliar with? So that is a challenge. And then also, how do I adapt, what I shaped myself to be to fit that model of a SEAL to now fit that model on the outside where I know being a SEAL won't exactly fit. And I have to be okay with leaving that part, not like a split identity, but I have to be okay with leaving that part and pursuing a new path, which, A, being aware of it and coming to terms with it is a challenge. And then B, okay, taking some uncertain steps, can be a challenge for some. I was both excited and a little apprehensive. Like, hey, I'm excited to try something new. I know there's a ton of things out there in the world. There's a lot of opportunity. Part of my limiting factor was I don't really know what's out there.
I mean,
So
that's.
it's like, what's out there? What can I possibly do to help others or to do things that I enjoy?
I mean, thanks for sharing all that, Kevin. Because as you're talking, I was thinking that's such a great point that you were 18 years old when you went in. I mean, you didn't know about what business opportunities or what would, and plus, the world probably looked totally different 22 years later than it did when you were
It's like
18.
Austin Powers, yeah.
Seriously, that's I'm glad you said the ages because I was thinking, wow, yeah, that's like a whole other generation. And maybe what you wanted to do at 18 is going to be totally different at 40. And I love how you said that certainty and the bigger mission when you're in the SEAL teams. And then once you retire, it's like there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And actually, you're leading me into another question, which I wasn't even thinking about until you said it. Do you still live by, and I know you and I have talked about this offline, like an ethos, and I know in the Navy SEALs you have one. Do you now have like a Kevin Stark mission statement, or do you still hold yourself, I don't want to say hold yourself to the standard because I know it's you're still extremely high standard. Do you still go by the Navy SEAL ethos, or is it more of a personal mission statement that you sort of transition into?
Oh, such a good question. I still have the SEAL ethos posted in my office. I use it more as like a humble of not acknowledgement of that was an opportunity for me to serve. It was part of my past. But ultimately, in every given moment, we have the power to choose who we are, which to me, that's the fundamental, my fundamental belief in life that makes everything go around is our fundamental ability to choose, that we have free will. And so I look at that, the ethos, and I'm grateful for it. But I also have to adapt it to my current environment as a father and as a husband. And as someone who doesn't wear a uniform anymore, I still see myself serving the country. I might just not get to, jump out of planes and shoot guns to do it, but maybe I can coach and help others, find their own path of meaning and excellence. So that's how I choose to serve. I try to, be an example. A lot of times I feel frustrated with the amount of, gosh, just sadness in the country, the confusion, the sadness. So I try to set an example of man just being kind, but also strong at the same time. So my ethos has changed, and I have developed my own, but it borrows and it acknowledges my past, but it also, sets me up to move forward in the future in ways of service that are important to me now.
I love that. I love how you said it's changed. And I'm also thinking about when you said you don't have the uniform anymore. I'm like visualizing you with your kids and like making them run in and out of the surf. Like, I don't know if that happens or not, but no, I appreciate you sharing that. And I mean, that's a great lead in too, because I wanted to ask you about your coaching and training. And I mean, as you're talking, I'm like, my goodness, like who better to get coached or trained by than yourself? And I love how you say living a life of excellence. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're up to now as far as the coaching front goes, and what type of person you are coaching? Because I'm sure there's people on this call, myself being one, that would love to be coached by somebody that arguably coached the greatest training in the world.
I appreciate that, and it's a work. I'm a work in progress.
You're so blessed.
always.
You're so I love it.
It's true, man. I've fallen off the wagon many times.
Me and you both, we have something in common. I've one thing in common with the Navy SEAL. I'm so excited. That's
That and our haircuts. Dang, man. I've wrestled with this for a long time. What is excellence? What is happiness? What is meaning and purpose? Probably because it's been an existential question for me, right? If for some people it's not a question because they don't need to ask it because they have the meaning and the purpose that they need calling to them in every moment and they're answering it. The approach I took is, look, there's a lot of information out there, and everybody's, to me, adding scaffolding or decorations to fundamental human truths. And my goal is to really bear down and, like, okay, well, what are those human truths that then can be shared with everybody and applied to everybody? And I've found that some of these things, they're timeless. If you look back thousands of years and you hear a quote or you hear a story of how someone lived and it resonates today, and that example can still be followed, to me, that's a truth. And I think that helps me also remove my own ego from, oh yeah, hey, this is, the Kevin Stark method, which I think is total bogus. It's at best, how are we taking these human truths and just making them relevant to our time and space now? And I think one thing that I always come back to is just our ability to choose. And that just from there, that opens up everything. Like, if you recognize that you always have the opportunity to choose your path, to choose how you respond to a stimulus, to an event, how to appraise an event or a situation, and then choice leads to making meaning of your experience in life. And if you have meaning in your experience in life, I think you have fulfillment and purpose. So to me, it's like, hey, how are you choosing to show up in the world, and how do you choose to respond to something? And obviously, I'm leaning hard on, Viktor Frankl and, Buddha and Jesus and, the Stoics and Gandhi, Martin Luther King, all of these people who have kind of transcended the ego and then used choice as a way to change the narrative and to show, to me, that's what a warrior does, right? You take the light that that's within you and you go through the darkness and you get the scars, but then now you share the light and the scars with others, and that's how you build the human experience. So that's a super long-winded way of saying, if you could just remember that you always have a choice in how you respond to whatever you're going through in life, like that can be immensely powerful, and no one can ever take that away from you, ever.
Oh, that's so good. It's just amazing that I think that's so powerful, especially anybody going through any setback. It's like, if you're, and I mean, I think about it all the time, like being an alcoholic, and it's like, I look back at it and go, if I can now help people not become an alcoholic, then I don't have any regrets. Like that's, I went through that for a reason, versus like, this is just who I am and I cannot change. I mean, I think that's, so is that who you like to work with is, and I feel like you could help so many different people, but I mean, is that a niche that you want to help with, somebody that is wanting to make a change or a certain leveling up of some area of their life? Or do you think most anyone can benefit from what your game plan is as far as coaching goes?
That's a good question. I feel like when I first left the military, I was working with, leadership, folks in medicine who are dealing with a lot of stress, especially from COVID. And and then, it's funny, you're like high performance leadership, this, that, and the other thing. And I kind of got a little jaded with it, because I would notice in my own town, people walking around, dealing with stress and struggling, and family friends would come over and they're dealing with a lot of stress, and even my own life. And I'm like, this, I wanted to remove the whole, hey, get your performance edge, high performance, so you could do more, blah, blah. I was like, that's bullshit. This belongs to everybody. Like, the CEO who's leading a company, or the entrepreneur, or the surgeon who's got a team of life or death, yes, that's high stress, but that experience, doesn't deserve more training or attention than the mom of three working two jobs, or the family that's struggling right now to make ends meet, or, one of my closest friends in the world who's going through cancer. You know what I mean? It's like, we're all in this together. And so what I try to do is, now I think, but once again, kind of drawing back to the universal truths, is if it's a universal truth, it resonates and it can help all of us. And that's not, I'm not trying to say I'm here to help everybody with these universal truths that only are mine. Like I said, they're universal, they're thousands, they're millennia years old. But it's a long-winded way of answering your question and saying, I love to help anybody. I feel like there's a way that, helpers like you and I, people that want to help other people, they will be drawn to us because maybe we can help them in some way, just because we relate, however it might be. And it's kind of just a matter of the student finding that person who can help them the most, whenever stage in life they're ready for. But yeah, I think it just belongs to all of us.
I love that. And I love how you said, because obviously you've been at the highest level of performance with being in the Navy SEALs and then instructing those coming through, and to be able to give those principles and add the value, no matter where that person is, you can meet them where they are, and they don't necessarily have to want to be, running 100 miles or becoming a Navy SEAL. I think that's really cool that you can adjust and meet people where they are currently. So kudos to you. And Kevin, I knew I was so excited beforehand, and I think it was even better than I expected. And I just wanted to thank you for being willing and open to share some stories and your personal struggles and triumphs. And you're just so modest through this whole thing. And a mutual friend of ours connected us, who's also one of the most modest people I think I've ever met in my life. And I appreciate you, my friend. And I can't wait to see where this goes. And whenever you're doing your coaching, and I know we're trying to figure out something as well, but I want to be in on it. Like, I want to, like, I just feel like you're such a wealth of humble, amazing knowledge that I'm all in. So where can people find you? We were talking a little bit offline. Is LinkedIn is the best way?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. I mean, likewise, I always enjoy these conversations and just sharing our appreciation for helping others. So thank you. I'm on LinkedIn right now. There'll be some other things coming out in a bit. I'm doing a few retreats here and there and doing some coaching. But if anybody wants to connect, I'm always happy to connect and have a chat. So just Kevin Stark.
I love it. Yeah. And I'm connected to Kevin as well. So you could find him through me on LinkedIn. And yeah, with those retreats, I mean, who better to lead a retreat than 22 plus year Navy SEAL? It's just, I can't even imagine what you're teaching people on these retreats. And I want to get to one as a participant myself. So I just feel like I will learn a lot about myself and probably connect with some of the best people on the planet. I'm sure that community is unbelievably powerful.
Yeah, great people.
Yeah, I love it. Well, hey, thank you again, my friend. And honestly, thank you for your service to this country. I mean, I'm going to get emotional saying it. I mean, you're just, and for your friendship that we're building, you're just a huge inspiration to me. And I'm seriously blessed to call you a friend. I'm honestly like, just like surprised in the best way. I'm like, how cool is it? Like, you're so humble. You're just a beast. And it's incredible to be able to be friends with somebody like yourself. So I look up to you and appreciate your friendship and mentorship and coming on and sharing a lot of your takeaways with our audience.
Hey man, you too, Matt. I really appreciate it, buddy. Looking forward to the adventure.
Yeah, I can't wait. Who knows what may happen in the future. And thank you all for listening or watching. I mean, this has been incredible. I'm sure you all feel the same. Thank you, Kevin. And we will see you all next week on the podcast.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment if you enjoyed the show. To follow on social media, at Matt Scaletti on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a message, reach out. I'd love to hear feedback, and wishing you an amazing rest of your week.